Business and Transportation for Thursday, May 7th. And we'll begin.
Green light is here.
I'm going to begin going out of order. We're opening a work session on House Bill 2817. Mr. Stembridge, we had this bill and we had asked for a couple of various amendments and we need to talk about those.
Yes, you talked about this on Monday. This is House Bill 2817. The dash A2 eliminates the public interest criteria, those seven words that were halfway down the page. And the A3 does the same. In addition, adds a emergency declaration, makes the bill effective upon passage. We've received the fiscal and revenue paperwork on both of the amendments.
Okay, Mr. Russell, if you come up, and somebody from the department want to come up on this, I want to talk particularly about the emergency clause because we may have some issues with that, and so we just need to sort that out before we decide which one to go forward on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Association and the Oregon Moving and Storage Association, the requester of this bill. In looking at the two sets of amendments, the dash twos, is exactly what we discussed in committee on Monday, and we certainly support those. The dash threes add an emergency clause, and the bill itself requires the department to promulgate administrative rules and get the new system in place, and that's going to take them some time to do that. My concern is if we put an emergency clause on this bill, they're not going to be able to do it, and it's going to cause confusion, at least, in the marketplace in terms of you've got the new statutes in place, but you don't have the administrative rules and the process in place to make that happen.
Mr. Delpani, on that issue.
Mr. Chairman, Greg Delpani, Administrator, ODOT's Motor Carrier Transportation Division. If the bill is effective upon passage and it does require that I do an administrative rulemaking, there'll be a period of time, maybe 90 days, whereupon someone that applies for authority to be a household goods carrier is going to have to wait because I don't have the standard by which to measure whether or not to grant him his application. And that's the difficulty. It'll take about 90 days to do the rulemaking.
Okay. So, Senator George, you're the one that had mentioned offline about that. I would appreciate your comment on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I don't want to create a huge amount of problem for the agency. The concept is that there are certain people right now who would like to get their license as possible. And if it goes without the emergency clause, then what happens is they can't really apply for this until the first of the year, roughly. And that, and the concern is, in essence, they're operating still outside the law.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I hate to confuse the matter even further, but we could do another set of amendments with an effective date that gives the department enough time to do the rules that would be before the 1st of January. Like you could make the bill effective the 1st of October, and then that would give the department the necessary time to do the administrative rules and get everything in place, and that would get the whole program in place quicker than if you just did the dash twos. So there is another option that sort of is in between the two we have before us right now.
That's not a big thing to me, so.
I mean, Mr. Chair, I guess the question is that the folks who really wanted the bill want to apply as soon as possible. As soon as the agency gets done with the rules, they want to be able to go in there and apply. And I'd like to accommodate them. At the same time, I don't want to. If you're on a timeline to get this thing moved for some reason, then I understand. And so I'm not going to. I support the bill, however you move it. So, if we could do that, what Mr. Russell discussed, that'd be great. And if you feel like you want to move the bill without the emergency clause, I'm not going to be that one up. I prefer to have it.
Okay, Senator Berger.
I guess my comment would be that it's a real shame that they would miss the entire summer season when most people move. I mean, either way.
They would miss it anyway.
They're going to miss it. In 90 days, they're going to miss it. 1st of January, they're going to miss it. But I think I would be prone to go without the emergency. I think I would be prone to go with the emergency clause, even though it's 90 days. At least that's quicker than 1st of January.
Well, why don't we do this, if it's okay with the committee. Let's let's ask for an effective date of October 1st.
That
so that the rules are done and we speed it up, mm-hmm. and would that, Mr. Delpani, you think be an adequate time to make those rules if this effective date was October 1st?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And, yes. Is it? And I don't know how, I've never seen anything drafted this way, but or completion of the agency's rules, whichever is sooner, type of thing. So if you guys finish them in 30 days, then they can apply right away?
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in statute.
Yeah.
I think it'd be better just to have
okay,
a date.
Okay, that's fine.
And this will take effect sometime at the end of June. It was signed by the governor, so it would be September before that. Even this 90 days would be done, so it would be within a week or two anyway. So October 1st would seem to be a date that would meet the goals that you've outlined, so these people can do that. They'll know that that is the effective date, so they can probably prepare even getting paperwork ready to go as soon as possible. So that would seem to be a nice compromise, and they would not have to wait till January. Would that be good for you, Senator Berger?
I think that would be a good compromise. I'm just kind of curious if there's any way at all for these people to participate in the summer while the rules are being made.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, most of the people that testified, at least the ones that I'm aware of, are already in that business.
Okay.
Okay. Then we will have that done, and we'll bring it back again. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Close the work session on House Bill
2817A.
Staff order. Staff order amendment, October 1, 2009. We'll open up public hearing on House Bill 2408. Mr. Stembridge.
Chairman, House Bill 2408A directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to report by October 1st, 2010 on the capacity, availability, and efficiency of rail transportation in Oregon, including the possible extension of commuter rail service to Salem.
Representative Greenlick, I believe this is why you're here. Come forward, please.
It is, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, Northwest Portland to North Plains. And, I'm here on behalf of House Bill 2408. Early this year, we got to ride the new West Side Express, the West train from Wilsonville to Beaverton, connecting there with the TriMet and the Beaverton Transit Mall. And it was a the culmination of a long-held dream by Commissioner Bryant of the Washington County Commission and others of us in the Washington County delegation. I'm half Washington County delegation, half Multnomah County delegation in my district. It was very exciting, a really nice ride. Apparently the horn tooted a little too loud. Apparently that's being worked on, but it took about 14 years for the from the time that first came to mind to the time we actually got on a train and took that ride. It's very obvious to some of us that it would be easier to extend that commuter train to Salem than it was to get it from Beaverton to Wilsonville. So we began talking about this in the 2007 session and proposed a task force to begin to look at it. And we had enthusiastic support from the mayors and the councils up and down the line from Beaverton to Salem. It ran afoul of the notion of having to create another task force. There's always the competition for interim task force. So we came back this time and working with the rail division of ODOT came up with the idea that they in fact are doing a rail study, and it is funded, and it's looking at rail capacity throughout the state. I suspect you folks had something to do with getting that moving. Including in that study is a specific look at the potential for expanding this commuter rail and other commuter rail lines. We've talked about moving commuter rail lines in a variety of places, McMinnville to Oregon City, or a variety of other possibilities. We also promised to have one to Welch's if we passed that bill last time.
Excellent, excellent. Senator, yes, I had that amendment. I just never called.
But what we came up with after talking to Kelly Taylor and the folks there is they are going to have this information available. And this bill takes a simple next step. It and asks them to present their findings to a group of people who are the stakeholders in the in this whole process. And that takes up most of the lines in the bill, are one each for the various stakeholders, and then use the auspices of a of the House Transportation Committee in the interim, or a joint committee perhaps in the interim, to review that and to see what the potential is, and to see if we can, if it does make sense, if it does have ridership potential, if it's economically feasible, if it has economic development potential, because incidentally that's where the mayors along the line are very much interested in, the potential for economic development for them, then we can think about in the 2011 session what's the next step to try and move this forward, as the federal government is about to probably finalize the next big transportation package.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for Representative Greenlick? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2408? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2408. I have a motion.
I'm voting no.
You're voting no. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2408. As amended, be moved to the House floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Berger has moved House Bill 2408 for the do pass recommendation. It's up to you, committee. It's okay. Any objections?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator George objects. It passes. And let's see, do we have any senators on this bill? No. Oh, yes, there are. Bonamici and Hess. I'll ask Senator Bonamici to carry the bill. Thank you. We'll close the work session. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2040B.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2040B expands the requirement that drivers maintain a safe distance from emergency vehicles to include roadside assistance vehicles and tow vehicles, specifies that compliance requires either moving to an adjacent lane or slowing to at least 5 miles an hour below the posted speed limit. This is the move over law.
Okay, well, Al Elkins and Darrell Foy, if you want to move over to the witness stand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Tow Truck Association. I'm also speaking for Mr. Craig Campbell, who represents AAA, who couldn't be here today. He's trying to move over a virus, and so far it's winning. I would like to thank the Northwest Automotive Trades Association and AAA for bringing this bill forward. This is an important piece of legislation for us. Adding tow trucks to the move-over provisions will help provide a safeguard to our drivers. And information I have received from the International Towing and Recovery Association of America, there are 31 states currently that have move-over laws that include tow trucks. Also, the International Towing and Recovery Hall of Fame and Museum says that nationally 40 to 50 tow operators are killed a year on duty on the road, and they added that they would like to see this law passed. That concludes my testimony, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins. Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller, on behalf of the Northwest Auto Trades Association, I agree with what Mr. Elkins said. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I'm just looking over the bill, and so this would be only when they are actually responding to a motorist in need, and not just going down the highway, correct?
Mr. Chair, the statute does say displaying your emergency lights at one point in the current language of the statute, I believe.
Okay. Okay. Questions? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This only applies if the vehicle is actually parked on the side of the road, right?
That's correct.
Like if a tow truck has its lights on and it turns them on while it's driving, that you don't treat it the same way as you would.
You're correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Just one.
Yes, Senator Stark.
The lights have to be on for this to occur, right? I mean, just to
that's
be
correct.
Okay. Let's make that clear.
Okay. Lights on. Are we home? Any other questions, Senator Mayor?
Nope.
Okay, close public hearing on work session on House Bill 2040.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2040 to the floor for due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berger.
I think it is a shame that we have to require this kind of bill. Honestly, I would think that just out of courtesy that people would not have to be mandated to do this kind of thing.
I would not disagree with you at all on that. Okay. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Who would like to carry the bill?
Okay.
Senator Starr.
It's a good 10-second bill.
All right.
Good bill.
Put up public hearing on House Bill 2554A. Mr. Stembridge.
Chairman, House Bill 2554A expands the definition of vulnerable user of the public way to include any farm tractor, implement of husbandry, motorcycle, for the purpose of determining penalty for reckless driving.
Okay. So I have Roger Beyer, Wayne Schumacher, and Bob Russell, and in the on-deck circle, Sean Cleave.
Apparently no one wants to join me. Oh, here we are. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer, again representing the Oregon Seat Council. House Bill 2554 is before you. This bill is a very important bill. I'm hopeful that Representative Springer will get over here. She gave excellent testimony in the House committee. She brought a couple different tractors, and I used to have some of those tractors in my office in this building, but I don't have them with me anymore. But the basic thing is that under the current law, only tractors without an enclosed shell are considered vulnerable users of the highway, and this bill simply, in the original form, removed those four words. Motorcycles was also added to it as amendment on the House side, but I'm here to speak about the tractor issue or the implement of husbandry. There is not much difference between a tractor with an enclosed shell and without an enclosed shell. Both have vulnerable users in them, and this bill is simply to correct that. I would say is an error in the law. Unfortunately, last year there was a tragic accident up in my old legislative district where a child, I believe a 16-year-old boy, was driving an implement of husbandry that had an enclosed shell, and he was hit and killed. And that was the impetus for this bill, to bring this bill forward, because hopefully it will allow all tractors and implements of husbandry, whether they have a closed cab or not, to be considered a vulnerable user of the highway. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I will be happy to answer any questions if I can, and thank you very much for holding the hearing, and hopefully you will move the bill forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Association. During the interim, I worked with Representative Springer and her constituents to develop this bill because of that very tragic accident. And I just wanted everybody to know that we strongly support making the changes regarding farm tractors. We're not involved in the motorcycle part, so we're not quite sure where that came from. But we do support the bill and urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, my name is Wayne Schumacher. I come to you today as Representative Bikepack of Oregon, and we're responsible for the motorcycle amendment. as probably is no surprise to you. We've actually, over the last two sessions, attempted to introduce some similar type of bill, and when this vulnerable user bill passed the last main session, a motorcycle actually was intended to be on there, and it ended up somehow getting knocked off. So we're very pleased about the fact that this has been amended to include motorcycles. Certainly motorcycles are a vulnerable population, and it's appropriate to be added. So we support this bill wholeheartedly and urge your support as well in passing it.
Okay.
I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah. Can someone define for me exactly what all includes the public way? Because, I mean, when I see things like an existing statute, roller skates and inline skates, you know, I mean, you're talking about tractors are on the highway. I'm thinking, well, you're not supposed to be on inline skates and roller skates on the highway. And this mentions crosswalks and it mentions shoulders, but are there other parts of the public way? You know, Bob, I'm putting you on the spot here. But
yeah, Mr. Chairman, you've got bike paths that are part of the public way.
and sidewalks and the shoulders, the whole thing is what we're talking about here. So it's sort of fence to fence. It would be included in public way.
Hmm. Interesting. Senator George.
I want to talk real quickly about the motorcycle amendment. When I think of vulnerable users of the public way, these are folks that are traveling at a different speed with the equipment that's either necessary or they're in essence pedestrians. And it seems like to me that motorcycles are a vehicle that travel at full rates of speed, many times in excess of speed of cars. And so our reaction time is totally different. We need to encourage public safety when it comes to motorcycles, but I'm a little concerned about adding motorcycles to this list because I'm not sure it mixes. It's like apples and oranges to me as far as the role of motorcycles versus, say, a farm tractor or a skateboard or roller skate. I understand that motorcyclists put themselves in a vulnerable situation because they're not in an enclosed vehicle, but that's not the same as somebody who is actually doing something like a farm equipment or who is a pedestrian. And if you'll notice in line 12 in the bill, it says scooter, and the idea is that scooters move at a slower rate of speed than do other vehicles. So give me a justification for why you would include motorcycles in there.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's a good question, actually. And the reason that we felt it was appropriate is the biggest issue is visibility. Scooters as well as motorcycles are consistently, when they are involved in an accident with another vehicle, typically the word that comes out of the driver of the four-wheeler is that I didn't see them. And so consequently, they are, by that particular exhibit, a vulnerable population. And the reality is that in some particular cases, they are not able to maneuver in a certain particular way. Inevitably, when it is involved with another accident, those kinds of things come up in a testimony or in a description. So that's the reason for the population. Certainly, they do travel much faster than any of the other vehicles listed in the bill. But it's predominantly because of the visibility issue and the unawareness of automobile drivers. And we're hoping that this lends just maybe even a small significance to that issue, that they need to be aware.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yeah.
I guess you sort of hit on my issue. When I think of somebody on roller skates or skateboard or a pedestrian or a bicycle, in the car I'm moving at a rate of speed where I can know where that person is and I should be aware of them. But when you're talking about motorcycles, they can be moving faster than I am even, which the rest of these lists can't be. So there has to be actual mutual respect here. And what happens here is we're talking about increasing the penalty on the four-wheel driver because they didn't see a very fast-moving motorcycle. And I can understand the vulnerable user is somebody who can't quickly get out of the way or who doesn't have quite the responsibility. It seems like I'm a big supporter of motorcycles and motorcycle users, but I'm not sure that they, to me, strike me as a vulnerable user. In essence, they're very quick, very fast, and in essence, a lot of times the reason why people don't see them is because they're so fast. Or a tractor or somebody on roller skates or on scooter or bicycle, totally different. So I'm not sure you answered my question there.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I guess it still relates back to visibility. They are typically a smaller profile than a four-wheel vehicle, obviously even smaller than possibly a combine or a tractor. And because of that reason, it's a visibility issue. And it makes them more vulnerable, I think, specifically because of that reason. It's oftentimes why you find there's a left-hand turn in front of a motorcyclist. The fact that the motorcycle may be moving at whatever speed coming towards another driver, and they just make a left-hand turn in front of that motorcycle, it's typically because of the low profile or the inability, and according to them, to see that. So that's our sense is why it makes it a vulnerable population.
One last follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess the thing is I agree with you. It's hard to see motorcycles, and I don't deny that. But what this bill does is increases the penalty on a car driver because of that situation. Well, the car driver is in a position where they're not dealing with people that are moving slow that they need to be. This is something that can be moving very quickly. So you're actually increasing the penalties on a car driver. And that's what I'm trying to get at. We're actually increasing the penalties. I'm not sure that justifies it because the motorcycle person is in a completely different position than somebody on a tractor or on a bicycle.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I think now I see what you're getting at. And again, for the last two sessions, we were into trying to introduce a bill that would increase the fine or mandate specific penalties or fines for someone who injures a motorcyclist in an accident, in an at-fault situation. The issue is there's very inconsistent appliance of any kind of fines when it involves a automobile and a motorcyclist. Oftentimes, there may not even be a citation because the officer may not even feel that there was a specific at fault. It just happened to be a circumstance. And what we're trying to do is to build an awareness that it is a vulnerable population and that there needs to be some specific fine for that kind of behavior when obviously as a motorcyclist is injured and they're totally in the right of way at that particular point. So that's kind of the motive, if you will.
Okay. Senator Schrader.
I just wanted to make a comment. It seems to me in previous meetings here that we have actually looked at motorcycle safety and have passed legislation or to the floor dealing with continuing education for people who own and operate motorcycles dealing with this very specific issue. So if I'm following Senator George correctly, what he is saying is, you know, who is at fault here? And we're educating the folks who own and operate and ride motorcycles to be very careful specifically about what you're talking about. So I kind of share your concern about who will be trying to penalize here when we're actually offering additional training or mandating additional training for people that own and operate motorcycles.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schrader, I understand your question. Obviously, we've been very involved in the legislation that's been moving forward this session with regards to increasing the fine for riding without endorsement, mandatory training, Senator Walker's bill, et cetera. And obviously, that brings additional training and awareness to the population that are operating these vehicles. The problem that we have is we do not have that attention and that training coming to drivers of automobiles. And in fact, it was, and I definitely appreciate Senator Walker and her bill for mandatory training, did include a couple of sentences that requires a couple of questions in the driver's exam.
Right.
And so it does make awareness, a little bit more awareness, we think, from automobile operators. This is essentially part of that. And that is that automobile drivers need to be aware of the fact that they need to pay attention to the fact that if there's a motorcycle in the vicinity, that it, you know, hopefully will make them understand that it is a vulnerable population and that they will actually operate with a little bit more care. So I think it does feed in essentially to the whole concept of what we've been trying to do this session, obviously getting training to the operators of motorcycles. But on the other side of the equation, we definitely need more training with regards to the operation of motorcycles or how to operate around motorcycles from an automobile standpoint.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you all. Mr. Cleave, you're last up.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. Representative Springer couldn't be here today. She did have a conflict. For the record, I'd just like to provide Oregon Farm Bureau support for the bill. And with that, I'll wrap up my testimony.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Cleave? Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, do you plan to move to work session?
All right. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2554. We'll bring the bill back after people have a chance to mull over it a little bit. Mr. Stembridge, it's Thursday.
Mr. Chairman, I we're running out of House bills. We don't have anything for Monday.
Yeah.
Right.
So what we are going to do, Merry Christmas in May.
Okay.
We are not going to meet. You know, everybody else is just jammed up because they couldn't get their work done in time. You're so efficient that you have earned a day off.
Oh.
And so Monday we will not be having committee.
Well, it won't be a day off. It will allow us to get caught up with the stacks of reading that we all have to do to make wise choices for our constituents. But thank you for that. Thank you for that extra time to do that.
You can read about bills about half pints and mandatory greeters and really be up to speed on all the stuff coming our way.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll close.